Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick. With you this morning. Volatile morning. Probably the news from the Gulf of Oman has something to do with that. We'll talk about how oil is moving based off of that headline. We have some surprising number of earnings for this late in the quarter. Lululemon, RH, Duluth, Tailored Brands are reporting. So we'll talk about those reports. Looks like the end of the rally, at least for now, and Beyond Meat. So we'll talk about that. And two guests on the radar for today. First up at 8:15, Mark Chaykin will join us. He is the founder of Chaykin Analytics. And then at 8:35, we'll be joined by Ryan Dietrich, senior market strategist at LPL Financial. In the meantime, Joel, what's the word here overnight?
Holy moly, what a range here. We made a low at 28.67 in a quarter. We made that around 10 o'clock last night. I think that might be on a Trump tweet, tariffs on Germany. Then we turned around a little bit after that, I guess attributed to the oil rally, and spoos are up 8.25 now. This is basis of the June contract, folks. The front month contract is now September U. My numbers until Monday will be in the June contract. Your pre-market high, 94.50. Don't have anything up there, and 67.25. That's quite a ways on the downside. Don't have anything there. Unchanged on the day, 81 even. That's what I'll keep an eye on. That's mid-range also. Crude up $2.11. We'll go into the details on that. Got real close to the low of the move, just under $51, and rallied. Now trading up $2. Gold up $3.80 at $13.40.60. Silver up 5.7 cents at 14.81. And let's just call the Bitcoin futures flat. Triple D, I missed some action last night. How were things when you shut down at 8 o'clock?
Head on a swivel here last night, this morning. There was some action, but it wasn't like last night in the futures here. We were trading up 4 or 5 points. Excuse my cold, too. I'm all nasally. The kids got me once again. A little bit of a sore throat, a little tickle in the throat, and a little bit stuffy. So I know where it came from because both kids are sick. Not much you can do when they cough in your face every 5 minutes, but besides the point, last night, there was some action. It wasn't crazy. Individual headlines, there was a few, but the real action happened after 8 o'clock.
All right. AT624 wants to know if you hold RH through earnings.
No. I typically don't hold stocks through earnings. Wish I would have, but I do sometimes when I get stuck. That's pretty much the only time I'm going to hold through earnings is when I get stuck with something. Where I have no market after hours. I didn't realize it reported. I'm actually going through that right now in a stock, but we'll talk about that later. But no, I typically, if I can, I get out. What I was talking about with my RH trade the other day was typically stocks are strong ahead of the number. So I kind of lean biased for 2 to 3 days before a stock reports. I'm always biased to the long side. You know, maybe I'm trading market
every neutral. Stock,
trying to extract. What's that?
Every stock?
On the main ones, sure, because there's usually – it depends. I mean, if a stock's in a real gutter, maybe I'm going to be biased to the short side on it. But, you know, 90% of the time, it seems like these things have positive expectations before the reports. Shorts cover before the reports. Sure. Longs, people speculating, oh, I think it's going to beat. I'm going to go in. The human nature is to buy things ahead of – like, you know, to buy things, you know, and speculate ahead. So what I try to do is extract that alpha by buying stocks like RH, LULU ahead of the report, speculating that they might just get bid up for a couple days ahead of the report. And then I turn around and sell them before the report, sometimes right on the close. So it all depends. I mean, it's, you know, it's a tricky market. There's lots that happens here. I'm getting trades as I'm talking to you. I have a lot of trades on here.
All right, Spencer, give us the report.
But yeah, so anyways, I just want to finish my thought. So the trade is not to speculate on whether the earnings are going to be good or not. That's more of a coin flip. The trade is to extract the alpha from the positive expectations of the earnings. And you do that by owning the stock a few days before. Now, I hedge myself. I trade market neutral to try to eliminate the, you know, the market effect. So if a stock has a beta of 2, I'm going to probably short, you know, what I can against it. Maybe you're using XRT if it's a retail stock. Maybe you're using SPY. Maybe you're using Qs if it's a tech stock. I try to do as best I can to eliminate the market effects on that. So I'm just trying to extract the pure alpha of the positive expectations of the earnings. If I lost everybody at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's okay.
No. You didn't lose us. But that actually, you mentioned that kind of happened to you today by accident.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, silly me here. I don't want to talk about it actually because the stock hasn't reported yet.
Okay.
And I don't want people squeezing me. It's a really, I'm short a thin one here. So
okay.
I don't want to talk about it, but I can talk about it tomorrow.
All right.
With this trade I have right on, because I don't want my radio show to influence the opinion of it. So not that would, but it's thin enough that it could. So I'm not going to talk about it enough.
Wait, and this
I'll tell you tomorrow.
This is why
the trade's over.
This is why you don't forget about your positions.
Well, you got to realize what's reporting, what's not reporting. Sometimes right. There's some smaller companies that are reporting. You're like, oh, I forgot that one reported. So anyways, you know, you don't forget Lululemon's reporting. But some of these smaller ones, you know, especially during earnings season, it happens to me a lot where you've got, you know, 300-400 companies reporting some days. Okay, I took something home into the report. I didn't know it reported. Okay, well, now I have to sit back and take it through the report. I'm not going to, you know, try to get out. If I can get out after hours, great, but I'm not going to bid a stock up or pay a ridiculous price to get out after hours if I get stuck with something that I forgot reported. And when you're trading, you know, hundreds of stock trades, sometimes on a given night, sometimes you do an oops, and you're like, oh, that reported and was small, I didn't realize it. Okay, well, I'm going to hold it through the report. There's a whole art of trading a stock through a report, especially on a wishy-washy report. First of all, if it's wishy-washy, you know, start just bidding it up like crazy because then you're going to push the price away from you. So I kind of just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. But the one thing I will say is if you are holding stocks through earnings reports, you need to extract as much of that earnings. You know, if you're on the right side, you need to extract as much as you can of that earnings beat, because it's kind of a coin flip. And if you're always just quickly getting out of those winners on those earnings, but holding on to those losers, it can be a real mess. So what I try to do is the exact opposite. I try to cut the losers as quickly as I can for as little money lost as I can. And I try to hold the winners as long as I can and try to extract as much as I can out of that positive beat.
All right.
At 8:08 in the morning.
Let's go to the oil news real quick before just
okay,
because that seems to be the news of the morning, is that two tankers were damaged off the coast of Iran early this morning. Interestingly enough, as somebody, I forget who, pointed out in the chat, as Shinzo Abe is in Iran for the first time a Japanese leader has been to Iran in 40 years. But yeah, two tankers were damaged this morning off the coast of Iran, and that's the news. So
oil's up significantly on this news here. So oil catches a bid. We are now up. Wow. Oil's just in rocket ship mode here. Holy cow. We're up 42 cents in the US. So what's it equivalent on the CL?
4%, $2.
And I don't subscribe to futures quotes because they kill me. So I just have to use USO, but, or yeah, get a delay.
Yeah. It made a high here at 53.45 on the dailies. Your next daily high comes in at 54.04. That was your June 11th high. And man, oh man, I guess the low of move was 50.60. Then you put two other lows in at 50.72 and 50.92. This was on actually last night. It got under 51 as well. Trading near the highs of the session. If you're holding out for more on this, 54.04 was your high on Tuesday.
Crazy move here. That's a big move. And oil stocks are all trading significantly higher on this too, obviously, with the news here. Just remember your betas. You know, you look at a stock like ExxonMobil, it's always going to move less. You look at some of these littler ones like the rig is always going to be up more. So if you're trading oil stocks versus USO or crude ever, always know your betas. And a rig, NBR, some of the smaller ones that actually, you know, have the potential to go belly up if oil continues to slide. Those things rally significantly when you get a rally in oil.
Okay, let's. We got 5 minutes here. We can rip through the earnings here, and then we never did get the RH report. I think it was pretty good.
Did you do the Lulu?
No, I did not do Lulu.
Because we were talking, and we were okay. Let's do Lulu.
All right, Lulu. Yesterday after the bell, This is Q1 EPS, 74 cents versus 70 cent estimate. So beat their sales, also beat 782 versus $755 million. And they're raising their guidance for the fiscal year. The EPS guidance was raised only by 3 cents. And the fiscal year sales guidance was also raised a little bit. Q2 guidance came in line, and comps were up 14% for the Q1. So a good report all the way around, a beat, guidance raise for the fiscal year, in line guidance for the second quarter.
Show the after hours chart of this. You're not going to believe it.
Pulling it up right now.
Look at this after hours chart, Joel.
Who took it down to what is that? 155.22?
Yeah. On the headline. What are people doing? Are these news algos that dumb? Are they that dumb? I mean, Lulu can miss, you know, on everything, and only be down $15. They took it down on the beat raise to 155. I have no idea what they were doing. Anyways, congratulations to whoever had bids out there, because you just made a killing. It was funny, that Tepper guy who's on CNBC, not the hedge fund, but the new guy on Fast Money, he's like, if this ever pulled back to like 155-ish, or he was saying last night on CNBC, and he was saying it after the report, he's like, I would back up the truck, but he's like, I'm not paying 178. I was like, thinking, well, you shouldn't be doing Fast Money. You should be trading after hours, because he could have got it down there at 155 today.
You know what, Dennis?
155.
On that bracket, a million shares traded.
Joel, they pulled the rug out from under it. I was like, you see the initial earnings reaction. You're like, they must have, you know, missed big time. And then I look at the report and I was like, what are they seeing? And then I'm questioning it. And then it was already on the rebound. It's like 162, 165. I was like, they messed up. Or somebody messed up. 155. It was back at 170 a minute later, and then moving higher. Anyways, this stock is so loved by the street. You get a 15-point pullback in this thing on an earnings, and the earnings isn't that great. You back up the truck. So whoever bought it, whoever had bids out there, congratulations. This is a nice thing, I mean, about, you know, sometimes having orders out there just in case. I mean, even if you were 161 or 160, you know, maybe you were threw up for about 30 seconds when it went down to 155, but it came right back. So there's some money to be made in that price discovery process that's happening. And these news algos aren't as smart as Wall Street would make you think they are.
Not at all. So Lulu's at an interesting level. It's trading 179. That's up $8.11. Just bumping up here. Hit 182.80. That was your reaction high. That was hit just in the last bracket. I'll just keep an eye on that former all-time high, or still is the all-time high for now. A couple days ago, we hit 179.50. That's 50 cents away. I think you're going to get a look at that. After that, in the stratosphere here, 182.80 is the pre-market high. And did you give me the RAH report? No? All right, let's do that real quick, and then we'll bring in Mr. Chaykin.
All right, RH also reporting yesterday after the bell, kind of the same story here, a beat, and a raise. The Q1 adjusted EPS, $1.85 versus $1.55 estimate, so a solid Q1 EPS beat. Sales also a nice beat, $598 versus $586 million. Again, like I mentioned, raising their full-year guidance. EPS guidance raised nicely. The low end was $8.01. Now what is it? $8.76. So raising it by 75 cents, their full year EPS guidance, full year sales guidance also raised. So again, good across the board.
120.80 was your initial pop, though. Not a lot of stock traded on that. A little bit over 100 shares. So now you're getting your price discovery here. And it looks like 120. I'll call 120 the level. You did hit 120.40 in the last bracket. Now you're starting to leak a little bit. So use that 120 as a target on the upside. But nice move here in Restoration Hardware.
All right. I'm calling Mark Chaykin on the fly right now. Mark Chaykin, longtime friend of the show, joins us every other week. Founder of Chaykin Analytics. Pretty good in all areas of the market. Mark, are you with us?
Better than pretty good in some.
Pretty good.
Come on.
All right. Excellent in all areas of the market. How's it going today?
It's going well. How are you doing, Spencer?
We're good. Joel is trying to work out the wild overnight range here, and Dennis is trying to trade out of oil, I think. I'm not really sure what Dennis is doing.
Dennis is not sure what Dennis is doing.
Dennis
doesn't
know what Dennis is doing.
I don't know what I'm doing at the time. No, it's true. It's all true. I just trade and hope for the best.
You know, that's the truth, Dennis. You just trade. You don't look at your – you just like at the end of the day, you're like, oh, yeah, I'm up money. I must have done some
You know what my job is? It's pretty much damage control. When you make as many trades as I do, I'm always just working out of the losers. The winners look after themselves. I'm just always trying to work out of the losers. There's always something that's giving me – Anyway, sorry, Mark. What's going on?
Well, there's some overnight excitement on a tanker that was either sabotaged or blew up in, I think, the Straits of Hormuz off Iran. And so the price of oil spiked and the futures went from down to up. But I think this is a lot of noise, that this too shall pass. We're not going to war with Iran. So
well, that's good to know.
you know, unless we're looking at Wag the Dog. You know, two.
All
you
right.
Guys may not be old enough to remember Dustin Hoffman starting a war, but
no, I don't think any of us got that. Not even Joel got that reference. I don't think. No.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, president's ratings were hurting, so they started a fake war with a fake hero. And
all right, today we learned.
All right, Mark. So let's just talk here. I don't even know where to begin. How do you feel about this IPO market? Beyond Meat went beyond crazy. They had a sell-off. Tyson's coming out with some meat. But just Dennis and I were talking with Spencer about this IPO. I mean, there's some IPO mania going on here. How does it make you feel about the market? And are you participating in any?
No, not participating, but I think it's a little bit worrisome, not a very pinpoint precise indicator of a top, but it certainly smacks of the excitement that we saw in 2000. You had CrowdStrike yesterday with a huge move. Now, that's a pretty sophisticated cyber protection software company, but, you know, some of them are good. We were one of Zoom's first, you know, customers for their new platform, and the company's obviously doing well, but the valuations are way, way up there. So these are trading stocks. If you ask me for a prediction on Beyond Meat, I think they'll be down 5 years from now from where they are, just because of what you mentioned, competition. There's Impossible Foods, and articles I've read said they have a better protein-based meat substitute, but it's a fad, you know, and this too shall pass. So just like bottled water 20 years ago, everybody's doing it. But maybe I'm old fashioned and the world really is changing in terms of their health habits and their awareness, but I doubt it. So, you know, these are great trading vehicles if you can get in early. Buying after the IPO is really crazy. And we saw something in Beyond Meat that we rarely have seen in my life on Wall Street spans 50 years, where the underwriter actually downgrades the stock or puts on a neutral rating. That was something you never did. So it's a different world, totally different world out there, but something to watch.
What about the fact, Mark, that these IPOs, it's really been like a hit or miss kind of thing. Beyond Meat, obviously, huge hit. And Uber, you know, miss. Lyft, or actually last I checked, or Uber still up. But Lyft was a miss. CrowdStrike yesterday was a huge hit. We talked about Zoom. Pinterest kind of the same way. Miss there. I guess they're still higher than their IPO price, but it's down from the highs. So the fact that the IPO market has been, it's been hot, but it's been so hit or miss over the past couple months, what does that tell you?
That, you know, people are doing their homework. I wouldn't draw too much from the IPO market. I think, look, the public never gets in at the offering price.
Sure.
And so the public is faced with a decision. Do you buy the big spike? And the answer is invariably no. Occasionally you'll get a Beyond Meat kind of situation where you get a second wave up and the public actually is in a position to make some money. But in my experience, the public doesn't sell at highs. They get greedy and hang on, and then you watch what happened, and that's pretty ugly. So I just think It's exciting, and you know, clearly the public gets attracted to this, but not a place to be with serious money.
What do you do, Mark, with a couple of these retailers here that we were talking about this morning? Restoration Hardware and Lululemon both had outstanding quarters and raising their numbers for the fiscal year. So what do you do with each of those guys here?
Well, Lululemon has a bit of a negative power gauge rating. What's it doing pre-market? Let me check here. You know.
Yeah, we know it's off the highs.
Yeah, it's still up 5%, but it's trading down a few points. I don't think you run in and buy them. Restoration Hardware has a total rebranding. It's now RH. They've become a lifestyle company with magazines and, you know, much more high-end stuff. This clearly has a bearish power gauge rating. I wouldn't touch this. I would be a seller on strength in RH.
So weak on the power gauge, bearish on RH and bearish on Lulu, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What about Walmart here? I was reading hat tip to the Wall Street Journal. I think Walmart, they said they're on its longest winning streak in how long? In years. It's on like an 8-day winning streak here.
Yep. Made new all-time highs yesterday and consolidating they've consolidated Jet into their business. So it's now sort of part of the corporate fabric to be doing online and, you know, committing to online and faster deliveries. This is a highly competitive market. You know, we saw what happened to Kroger. It was great 3 years ago until it wasn't great. I don't like big retail. You know, you get what I call a niche player like a Target, and I can get interested because there's leverage on their online business, and they've done a great job of it. But I still don't see retail as a place to be. This is disruptive meets brand indifference. You know, the big brands are no longer the key. So people are willing to buy house brands from people like Walmart and Amazon and Target. I think retail is really challenged, and I don't think it's a place to be. I think you want to look for more clear-cut opportunities in sectors and industry groups where you don't have massive structural problems.
Walmart also included this morning in a group of companies selected by the FDA as part of a new pilot blockchain program to support the drug supply chain in the U.S. If the blockchain trade is still a thing, I don't know if it is. But so where should you be then? What are the areas of the market that you would like to be in right now?
Starting at the most conservative, insurance stocks have really been killing it. They're making new all-time highs. Hartford and MetLife are leading the pack there. Still love the software stocks, the ones we talked about on this show, like Cadence and Synopsys continue to make new highs. Cadence took a pretty big hit, dropped 10% from the 70 peak that it achieved after earnings, and now it's right back up to 69. So it went from under 63 to 69 here. And these are the stocks that I think you want to buy on weakness. Some of the more conservative names like Microsoft and Comcast, I think, are attractive here. If you look at what happened yesterday in the market, which was basically a mild down day, the defensive stocks did best. So the market is clearly sensitive to this risk on, risk off mentality. And in that kind of environment, I want to go for quality. And then finally, aerospace defense. There's some massive moves in bullish power gauge stocks. But again, you got to buy them on dips. This 6-day rally that we had to begin June is, you know, pretty much over. I've got some thoughts on the market that I'll get into and from a short-term point of view, but there are stocks like Leidos and L3 technologies that all look very attractive in terms of the power gauge. L3 is backing down a little. And a little bit of M&A activity. So aerospace defense, if you want to, you know, look for stocks to buy on pullbacks along with insurance and the software stocks.
How about AVGO real quick? Broadcom. had the earnings pop, filled the gap. Looks like it's fading a little bit here now. Looks like we're up $1.55. I don't know if that was a 50% retracement of that decline off the 320 area, but what's the gauge rating on AVGO? And then give us your market thoughts and we'll wrap it up.
Gauge rating is neutral, but it's gotten overbought with negative shaken money flow, failed to go through the 288 area, which is our long-term trend line. So I'd actually, from a short-term point of view, be a seller of AVGO. The semis are mixed. There are some that look good, and then there are others like NVIDIA that look terrible, and Western Digital, not precisely a semi, but storage looking terrible with a bearish power gauge. Short term on the market, we've rallied up, gotten overbought with taken money flow negative on both the SPY and the triple Qs. So that tells me that it's a good time for traders particularly to lighten up and for investors to keep their wallets in their pockets and look for a little bit of a pullback in the market. Not going to be big in my view, maybe down to 2800, 2850 again, and then if second quarter earnings come through strong in July, then we go up and make new highs in the 2950, 3000 range.
All right, Mark Chaikin is the founder of Chaikin Analytics. As you mentioned, longtime veteran of these markets. Mark, have a good rest of your day.
You too. Enjoy. Talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All righty.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Mark.
Futures have pulled off the high. This is June contract, folks, 28.9450. We've backed off 6.5 handles here at 28.88 and a quarter. On the downside here, I'm keeping an eye on that close at 28.81. And, boy, we did a lot of chopping in that, just 28.80. I was watching it. Actually, I got sick of watching it late in the day. It was between like 28.78 and 28.82. It was like trade the range. It did a lot of futures traded in that area on the rollover. Triple D, we got a couple minutes here before imbalances. We did Restoration Hardware.
We did not do Tailored Brands, so let's do that one.
That's wild too. That's been wild.
ELRD reporting yesterday after the bell. Q1 adjusted EPS, 21 cents versus a 15 cent estimate. Sales, 781 versus $776 million. So beat and beat. Q2 EPS guidance, very light low. 65 to 70 cents is the range they gave. 95 cents was the estimate. So light on that guidance, but an otherwise fine quarter.
So bring up the after hours and pre-market chart on this one, because this thing's been everywhere too.
Looking at it.
What is this, the yo-yo trade?
I have no idea.
What's up with this one? This was up, it was down, it was up, it was down all night then. And then they decided to just rally the hell out of it this morning. This thing went up over $6, and now it's back down again. What time did it just rally up to like 6:40?
It rallied up to 6:40 at the 7:45 bracket.
What's going on? What's up? I mean, if you have options on this and you are not trading the stock against those options, this is the stock that you could have made a killing on. If you had calls, you could have been selling the thing short against it at 6:20, 6:40, bringing it back in, buying it. This is the dream chart for trading your stock against your options. I'm going to talk about the stuff about out in New York and do some examples, but I don't like buying options. I don't like paying premium. But if you do buy options and you are not trading the stock against your options, you are missing out on a lot of profit opportunities because you capture all that chart with really zero risk. I mean, just hypothetically. Okay, let's set up, we can do it hypothetically here. But if we go to and grab the options chain, look at like the 550 or whatever. So that just went off the board. So if we go to the options chain and we obviously have the, I'm just going to go grab this week's option expiration, which is the June
14.
Yeah. I don't know if they have them on this. You might have to go out to the monthly. I don't know if they have weeklies on Tailored.
They don't. They don't have weekly.
No weeklies. So it's only 5 and 6. So, okay, you're limited a little more with the options. It's hard. Okay, so this is just not a good example because it's just not liquid enough. Like if you were paying the $6, you'd have to pay 40 cents. It's almost impossible to make money on this thing. Like I'm just looking at the 6 calls. And even, you could look at the 5 puts.
It's funny.
The option market makers are just moving it around. against that. So it was tough. It was going to be tough to make money on this regardless. But if you're long options, if they had like 550s, you'd be selling her at 620, bringing it in. Then you could sell it short at 620, bringing it in. It comes back down below. You buy it back. It's back up there, chops up again. You sell it short again, bring it back. I mean, it's a way to capture the chart. It's not a good example, though, because it don't have enough options on the stock.
All right. Pre-market low was a new low for the move in this. It was actually an after-hours low at 470. And then, as we mentioned, it rallied up to 645. And a lot of pretty good volume on that bracket. So, I don't know. Might be safe to say you won't see either of those levels today. And then we'll just chop around. Needs to go green now. Needs to get above the close of 554 for a chance of a rally to challenge 617, which was yesterday's high.
All right. Let's talk about this this Tyson Foods Beyond Meat thing. So this was always going to happen. Tyson Foods announcing that they are coming out with their own version of the Beyond Meat plant-based burger. I don't know if they have a name for it. No, they're just coming out with plant-based products. Tyson Foods was an original investor, maybe not original, but they were an investor in Beyond Meat, and they were forced to sell prior to the IPO. Because they're obviously a competitor. So this was a logical conclusion to this story for Tyson Foods, at least, or a logical development, at least. Good news for them. I guess Beyond Meat, Dennis, you're saying the story's over for now?
Yeah, you know what? It's a tough headline. And you knew it was probably coming. We know competition. I mean, it's not like they can't, you know, other rails can't make these plant-based burgers, too, that probably taste pretty good. So we know the buzz, but this is a tough headline because Tyson is, you know, one of the guns, if not the gun, in the industry. It's getting a nice lift. It's up $2 on this. It was up more, though. I don't know. Let's see what it does at yesterday's low, 130.156. Can it hold that? It was showing life yesterday, but, you know, you've basically had two headlines in a row that have knocked this down. This had some awesome life. I really thought it could get to 200. It got to 186. Obviously, I rang the register at 157 when the JP Morgan downgrade came, because you can't have be sticking around with stocks that get downgraded from the underwriter. I mean, we knew that was going to hit the stock. We talked about it that day. And it hit all the way down, more than I thought, though, down to 125. Bounced back nicely yesterday. They were trying to forget about it. A day with no bad headline hits, and now we come with another headline. Competition coming for them. Are they going to shrug it off? You know, that's the question. We got to see what it does. 131, and then the low from the previous day is 125. Below 125, all kinds of problems. As long as it holds 125, maybe you can try to buy the dip, but I'm more prone to sell the rallies than BYND now. Story fading fast.
I would have loved to see 155 in that one, because that was mid-range. It didn't quite get there yesterday, so I got nothing to show for it.
You mentioned, you almost argue a double top from the last 2 days, too.
Yeah.
Oh. 150, 150, 45. Oh. On a stock that has a dollar spread, I mean, that's pretty darn close.
Look at that. I did not see that one.
That's you know, and people look at this stuff. You don't have a lot of information, so you got to look at, oh, did it top on the same? People will look at that now and say, oh, 150 is looking like a problem. So now it gets back up to 143, 144. You're going to have people stepping ahead and selling it short or just selling out their longs because it's hard to borrow. But I think the setup is not as clean as it was. When I talked bullish and I thought they were going to squeeze them, stock was back at 140 that day, and they did squeeze them up to 186, so we got it right. It's not clean anymore. So until you can get up over those highs, you get a positive headline, like maybe they sign a big deal. Tim Hortons helped yesterday, but it's not a big enough deal. The story is going to be, you know, over for a bit anyways in the short term. Maybe they get another headline that makes the story hot again, but difficult headlines here the last couple days.
All right, let's take a quick break and grab the second guest, final guest of today, Ryan Dietrich, senior market strategist at LPL Financial. So we'll be right back in a moment here with Ryan. All right, welcome back, everyone. Pre-market prep, Spencer Israel, Joel O'Connor, and Dennis Dick, joined by final guest of today, Ryan Dietrich, senior market strategist at LPL Financial. Ryan, how goes it this morning?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. Thank you. I'm down here in Charlotte. We had 26 days in a row without any rain the month of May, and 23 of those days were 90 degrees. The last 5 days, it's rained every day. Now we have flooding. So it's just amazing how quickly things change, much like the market.
Wow, Good analogy, simile, metaphor, whatever you want to call it. Great one. I'm 10 out of 10.
Ryan, you're remaining positive here in the S&P. We've had a huge rally, and give us like your fair value target and why you think we might just hang up here and make another poke at the high.
Yeah, Joel, well, that's right. You know, at the start of the year at LPL Research, we had a fair value target of 3,000 on the S&P 500, and we stuck with that. I mean, I came on with you guys, maybe 5-6 weeks ago, and we said we still think this is a bull market. We still think higher prices are coming. And we didn't cut our estimate at the start of the year when so many other places did. And now, you know, you could argue a chip shot away from 3,000 on the S&P. But we really think, you know, after the 25% bounce that we just had, then the 7% correction on the S&P during the troublesome month of May, you know, there's still a lot more positives than negatives under the surface. But we're not naive. We think, you know, the trade stuff that's out there after the big rally we've had, I mean, S&P's up about 14% for the year, and it's only, what is today, say, June 13th. I mean, we think we maybe got a little ahead of ourselves. Some choppy consolidation could be likely, but when we look, you know, getting geeky on technicals, when I see multiple advanced decline lines breaking out new all-time highs, and I see Switzerland, I see Argentina, I see Greece, all these different countries around the world making even new all-time highs and new 52-week highs, that tells us, guys, there's not a global recession on the horizon. There's a global recession coming. Greece would be getting killed, and it's not. So, you know, that's really positive. We think, yes, trade gets all the headlines. But, I mean, we're still looking at 5 or 6% growth here in the United States when it comes to earnings this year. And the trade stuff is there. But there's still just more reason to think this whole market's alive and well.
So you're kind of fading the street on this. I mean, everyone's looking for a recession here, and the Fed has to take down rates. I mean, I don't see it either, but what I mean, the TLT, I mean, the market is begging for a rate cut here. You seem to be of a contrary opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is very unique, right? Because you got the bond market almost just throwing a fit, pounding its feet that it wants some type of a rate cut. But then we see things like what we just had earlier. Things that we just had earlier this week, where we saw, or last week's consumer confidence spikes, small business confidence spikes. I mean, we see some really positive things that are taking place under the surface that say maybe we still get that rate cut, but the economy is still strong, so maybe we get the best of both worlds.
Okay. All right. I'll go with that. And then sectors here, you know, the semis have been beat up here. Let's talk any particular sectors on your radar here. Maybe ones that have been taking a hit here but show potential on the upside.
Yeah. You know, as I was thinking about what I just answered on the last one, I do want to go back to that just for a second. So let's say, guys, we have a rate cut. What's in the back of everyone's head? Well, we had a rate cut in September of 07 and January 2001. Stocks pretty much got cut in half, major recession. That's what recency bias tells us. But when we go to LPL, we wrote about it. It's going to be later today on our blog, lplresearch.com. But we had rate cuts in 98, 95, 89, 87, and 84. The 12-month returns after, the worst was 9%. Some of those are up well over double digits. So if we get a rate cut, probably not this rate, not next week, probably in July, is what the Fed Fund futures are looking for. That's not the start necessarily of a blinding recession like we saw the previous rate cuts of new cycles. So that's just something we really think is so important for investors to pay attention to. And again, we'll keep talking about it, but we think it's powerful. But now, getting to your question, sectors. You know, yes, semis are leading, tech done well. We continue to be in the camp that value should do a little bit better than growth. And I'm fully aware that that trade hasn't really worked, obviously, for a while. And this year it's been kind of painful as well. But it's all about that economy like we talked about. We look at the yield curve. Look at the 2-10 yield curve. Look at the 10, 30-year yield curve. Those are breaking out to the highest levels this year. That should really help financials. Valuations on value relative to growth are near historic lows. So to us, there's a trade there potentially for investors for the rest of this year where value, and you look at someone and say you like value, you kind of get that side eye look like crazy. That's sometimes the best. I mean, believe me, it feels uncomfortable to say I do this. I talk to people. I think I'm nuts. But, you know, we really think that value is a place that we can find some alpha the rest of this year. And those, you know, those FANG stocks, not a lot of talk about companies individually, but we all know the FANG stocks, so I'll just word it like that. You know, some of the antitrust stuff going on, just some of the massive gains that they've had. We don't, it's not like we don't like technology. we don't have a problem with it, but we just think maybe it's got a little ahead of itself. Industrials and financials are kind of the two areas of the cyclicals that we think maybe can lead the rest of 2019.
Ryan, going back briefly to your comments before about the rate cut and recency bias, how much do you think today's behavior and narratives are influenced by the fact that people are just still really like scarred from what happened in 2008? Just still.
Right. I think a lot of it, right? I mean, you look at market sentiment. Various put that a week ago. Various put to call ratio spiking to massive highs. We had the lowest number of bulls in the AAII sentiment poll in a very long time. And that was on a 7% correction after a 25% bounce, one of the best starts to a year ever. It is amazing, I think, when we get these corrections, how quickly everyone gets so bared up and thinking, here we go, here comes the next one. And you read books and you talk about market history, and that was what happened in the Great Depression, right? It took almost, 25 years to make new highs from 1929 to 1954, and that's not even counting inflation. And it really scarred a generation of investors. And when we just had the lost decade of the 2000s with 250% corrections in the middle there, it really feels like that's where investors are once again. You know, you talk about always a bull market somewhere. Well, the U.S. Economic Policy Uncertainty Index, which is a popular index that's been out there that kind of looks at newspapers and looks at algorithms that takes a look at, uncertainty with policy. Well, that spiked to no one's surprise near multi-year highs with all the policy uncertainty that we have right now. But a funny thing about that, spikes in uncertainty in policy have tended to be more bullish than not. As that's everyone gets worked up, and then any positive news at all can kind of resolve to the upside. And that's kind of how we think things will play out again this year.
So it's almost like we won't really get past the recession until a generation like ages out of the market. And a new
It feels that way, right? I mean, the millennials, they not that they're not investing in the stock market, but we've all seen the numbers. They're quite skeptical of things. But let's be honest, we just had a 9-year record run, right, in stocks. So long, tied the longest ever on a total return basis, 9 straight up years. Last year, the economy was pretty good. I mean, 3% GDP growth, 20% earnings growth, stocks went down. And that kind of obviously frustrated a lot of people, the curveball of the trade stuff. And the fact of 9 years in a row are two reasons I think kind of happened. Now, this year, the economy is not as strong, kind of muddling through, if you will. But we got potential for a rate cut here. We see a lot of similarities, and people talked about this, right? 94, economy was strong, Fed was hiking. Last year, economy strong, Fed was hiking. Then we had a rate cut in July of 95 and a rate cut later that year. And the economy wasn't really that great. ISM numbers were in the low 40s in 1995, so there's a reason for cutting. We see some similarities now. If maybe we get one rate cut, and as I cited earlier, that doesn't mean the economy has to go into a recession. And potentially, that can rate cuts have a funny way of steepening yield curves after it happens, and maybe that can be what really kicks off also steepening the yield curve, and the economy can kind of pick it up a little bit.
All right. Before we go, Ryan, give us a name or two on your radar for the next week or so.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can't mention individual equities, unfortunately, but what I can say is gold. I mean, this is almost a contrarian play, right? But gold has been beaten up a long time. Gold's looking really good here. And look at the U.S. dollar. Everyone's on one side of the boat on the U.S. dollar, thinking dollar's going to go higher, U.S. economy strong. If you get a little more dovish Fed, we think the U.S. dollar looks a little toppy here. If the dollar were to start to go lower, that potentially can benefit gold and emerging markets. We still like emerging markets. They've been beaten up lately, but a lower trending U.S. dollar is a tailwind for emerging markets, good valuations, potentially a much better than expected economy in emerging markets. You got places like India, Brazil, and Argentina all really, really holding up well. So we like emerging markets, maybe for a shorter-term trade, if you will. Gold doesn't look too bad.
Gold and value. This was a contrarian 10 minutes, but that's okay. Ryan Dietrich has been on with us. He is a senior market strategist at LPL Financial. Ryan, appreciate the insights. Have a good rest of your day.
Appreciate it, guys. Look forward to the next one. Thank you.
Hey, Ryan, go blue.
Oh, yeah. Hey, there we go. That's it. We'll see. That's right. I got you.
I had to get that in there. All right, Ryan, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, guys. Take care. Look forward to the next one. See ya. Right. Bye-bye.
Wait, is he in Ohio Stater?
Yeah, he's a Bengals Ohio State.
Didn't know that. All right.
Yep.
Red Robin.
Yes, Red Robin. Holy cow. So a couple of headlines coming through here. Well, I guess only one headline, and that is they announced a 13D filing this morning showing that Vintage Capital A has an 11.6% stake in the company, and also they're prepared to bid $40 a share in an auction to acquire all of the company in an all, what would be an all cash transaction. So potential $40 bid on the table here for Red Robin.
I mean, it's a big pop. This is actually, we knew they had a position though, didn't we, Vintage Capital?
Well, they have an 11% stake now.
They must have done some buying over the last week or so.
Well, because you have a headline in Pro I'm just reading too. Like, I haven't been following the story, but it was from Wednesday, June 12th at 1:46, so yesterday, June 12th. And so Red Robins has installed a poison pill, hired a top activist defense advisor who has had some success in the past defending companies against Vintage Capital's Brian Kahn. So sources told is likely pushing for some M&A. I mean, this was...
We can see... So I can just go do a search for Red Robin.
A tweet from the deal newsroom.
Okay, so I can do, if I do a search for Red Robin and Vintage Capital, I get nothing before yesterday.
Yeah, but yesterday you could have bought this thing at $25.
Well, yes.
So that, you know, wow, whoever's reading the tea leaves there, I mean, it said this in this tweet, this deal newsroom tweet. Wow, that's a huge tweet. Because it, you know, if you're thinking, you know, there might be some M&A, maybe some people are gonna, you know, potentially come and do something here. Maybe it's Vintage Capital's gonna get, you know,
$40 though. The streets say no way.
Oh yeah, they're saying no way for yeah, sure. No they're way. Saying no way, but I mean, it's already a significant pop. So you know, and the stock, you know, had get really bad earnings. So if you know this deal doesn't materialize, right back down to 25 or lower. But you know, so that's the risk. The risk herbs are saying no, we don't believe it. You know, because sometimes you get, you know, an activist in there and they do stuff like this, right? They come in, it's, you know, Icon's famous for it, comes in, not saying that this is the case, you know, I'm not following the story closely enough, I'm just saying in some cases this happens, you know, an Icon comes in, buys a huge position, and, you know, he's doing it in Caesars and then pushes for a sale, trying to get his position, you know, to go up. So he's coming in trying to make the money and push the board for a sale. I mean, this is happening here too. They're saying, though, that they... you know, the headline that's happening here now is the Vintage Capital suggests the company's board conducted research, and the firm said it would be prepared to offer $40 a share for Red Robin. So they're saying they could offer it. But they're obviously, the market is saying 31.80 that, you know, they think that this probably isn't going to happen because there's 8 points here on the table if it does happen.
Yeah,
so,
I have to agree.
I
have to agree with Frank Ass. I ate there once, and I'm a big burger guy, and I didn't like the burger. Have you ever had it, Spencer?
Never. Yeah, I never have.
I was at a Red Robin like 15 years ago. I don't know if that my opinion still holds.
Did you
true.
Like it?
Sure. I don't know.
You know what about 15 you, years ago?
I never ate there. I've always wanted to. I've driven by it a couple times, but I've never actually ate there either.
Yeah, I was in one in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania.
People are agreeing with me here in the chat. I don't know. I didn't like it. Brent, you ever have a Red Robin burger?
Yeah, he's nodding his head. He's saying he liked it. Yes, it's I feel like it's a kid's restaurant. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, fine. Then
I'm not sure. But it doesn't look like it from the outside. But I'm like I said, I've never been in those stores.
Oh, not. Yeah. Okay. Moving
32, on. 32-44. You're getting a pretty good lift. You know, obviously, if this is real, there's a 40 bid on the table.
I'm not shorting it, right?
I don't think it's. I don't think it's going to materialize. So that's why I'm with the risk garbs here. And if I was long this thing, I'd probably ring the register at least on part of it. I mean, you could hold out. You're getting $6.50 here on, you know, a rumor that we're prepared to make a bid here, following due diligence. That following due diligence tells me they ain't real serious about it here yet. So,
33.40 was your May 20th.
And they said all cash, too, is what they were saying, too.
Yeah,
so
they're talking. I mean, well, first of all, you probably 33.40 was a high that you had on May 23rd. You could just go and see your daily highs. Pair of highs up at 35. Obviously, those are not really relevant levels. We got a $40
poke. Yeah, when you got a stock potentially in play, it's all what the risk guards are going to put the discount. I don't believe it. So this is why I think this is, you know, just bullying, trying to get the stock up. Icon, kind of like our Carl Icon style to a certain extent. I don't think they're going to materialize with a $40 bid. I think the market thinks they're not going to materialize. Obviously, the risk guards are saying there's a chance. That's why they bid it up. But if this was really like they really thought this was happening for sure, this would be up at $37 or $38. I think that a following due diligence comment makes me think that they're not as serious as they're trying to let on. They're just trying to push the price higher.
And
my opinion.
But here's another thing too. Shorts are caught. Shorts are caught in this.
Oh, yeah.
If you think you're going to get this thing back, you know, anywhere near that, you know, those levels from yesterday, unless they, you know, totally pull out, shorts are caught in this one. And I think that's what you have going on right now. It's a major short covering. They're looking all fat and happy after the report, spike down, can't rally. Oh, we're just going to consolidate in this area and then boom. So,
it's a big tweet from that tweet, which obviously Benzinga caught too there on the pro. I mean, that's a big tweet from yesterday, because if somebody was reading the tea leaves here, that they were, you know, trying to install poison pill, they thought something like this might be coming.
They did.
Yeah, you're up $7.
The issue is you don't know it'll be the next morning, right? So,
well, yeah, but if I would have saw that tweet, I didn't even realize, you know, because I don't follow the story close enough. I mean, stocks at the lows, you think, hey, maybe something like this is coming. So you got to give credit where credit is due. The firm that broke that tweet, that's a huge tweet.
Yeah, they're doing fine.
They had all kinds of money there. If you know, you read with the tea leaves there.
Tyson Foods is fading a little bit off its pre-market high. They got a little bit overdone, got up to 86.10, trading back in the 83 handles. So Beyond Meat is still down 677. How low did they take that thing down here? They took it to 131.35. That was your low. What was your low from yesterday? Your low from yesterday, 135.56. So there you go. That's a good level. You already bounced $4 above that.
We got to hold yesterday's low, and I think that's critical. And if they can shrug this off, we said this before, they took 2 days, but they tried to shrug off the JP Morgan downgrade yesterday to a certain extent. So it wanted to go higher. It wanted to try. But now that you get another headline with competition coming, let's see how it responds to this. Can it shrug it off? Can it turn around and go green? Because if it turns around and just keeps tanking and gets down there to test that 125, you know, it looks like more and more like the story is over. But it looks like, in hindsight, look, it looks like a blow off top up to 186. You know, it does.
Did you do imbalances yet?
No, weird today, too. I'm not sure if anybody else having this problem. Tweet at me. Let me know. Imbalances are there, and then they go to zero. Now they're there, then they went to zero. Now they're back again. So I'm not sure if they've reset the server a couple times, the NYSE, or if this is just, you know, an internal software problem here. But the imbalances are here now, so I can tell you about them. Disney has 67,000 to buy. Is there a headline on the House of Mouse? It's up $2. I did not notice, but I wasn't looking for one either.
Yes, we have a Morgan Stanley price target raise to $160.
There you go. All right. Me and Spencer Israel still along the House of Mouse here, sticking with it.
Yeah.
I think that I've talked about the story before. I think the multiple is reasonable enough, and I think their online streaming service, if they give a little bit of, you know, multiple to that once that product comes out, I think the stock could go a lot higher. So that's why I'm long Disney. I like it. Jumping back over to imbalances, CRM, 37,000 to buy. Inside day yesterday, kind of quiet after the merger. I'd say line in the sand for me is the 148.79. But the stock is so loved by the street, it seems to bounce back after it comes down. So I'm more inclined to buy pullbacks on this than to sell rips on CRM. Just my opinion. GE, your normal 115,000 share sell and balance. Morgan Stanley, 76,000 to sell. That's significant just because it's a big number there for Morgan Stanley. I don't know. I don't see much else.
Just a couple stocks off from the chat here. Cisco Corp. That's the one that makes the cooking grease, right?
Well, they're like a food supplier. Yeah. They're a grocery store.
Yeah, they make
Look at the rally in this thing. I mean, I think that was earnings put in a double bottom here. I think if you're this, maybe looking for 74.46. That was a high on the day before earnings.
Get it all back.
Yeah, you already filled the gap. So, and what's interesting too is that May 31st high was 74.45 that you had. 1, 2, 3 closes right in that area too. So like to see you get it up there another buck and a half. I see 74.5 as resistance. Someone's asking Lulu thoughts. We did cover that at the top of the show, and it's not fading here. It's just creeping higher. Now up $9.46. And bid near the highs of the session, 180.70. Some good volume there. So maybe you're getting a short squeeze here. Just in the stratosphere, former all-time high you can use as support. That was at one minor support at 179.50. But in no man's land here in Lululemon.
What do you do here with Target?
Target?
Yeah, news this morning.
Such a rally.
Their latest entree into the delivery wars, offering same-day delivery on thousands of items for $10 per order through Shipt, which they purchased a couple years ago, and knocking on the door of the all-time high.
As much as Walmart and Target have tried to be Amazoned, and we have saw them not been knocked down multiple times in the last few years from Amazon headlines, these stocks always seem to find a way to fight Amazon. Walmart, we know, is going head-to-head. Obviously, they've done a lot of things to change their style to compete with Amazon. Target appears to be doing the same thing. Both of these stocks, very resilient. Both Walmart and Target, very near all-time highs. Very impressive when Amazon has basically been attacking them for years. Can't seem to, can't seem to beat them, though. Like, or can't seem to at least knock them, keep them down. It knocks them down, but they can't stay down. So I'll give them that. Target and Walmart have been very resilient as Amazon keeps attacking their business model.
All right, S&P's back over 2890 here. Basis the June contract. Boy, what a holy! We're holding up here, 23 handles off the low of the session. 94.50 is your pre-market high. Have nothing there for you, folks. That recent high of the move has been at 29.1150. So. Possibly another 20 handles here. Getting our age, just a quick look again at our age. Got real excited, and it took it up to 120.84, so I would use that as a target. Didn't trade a lot of stock up there, and you have a gap to fill if they really want to get crazy in this. A gap to fill from its prior earnings report at 128.77. That's a ways away. But if you take out the pre-market high, it's a target just for me. The longer it takes to take out the pre-market high, the more chance of a fade. And I'll just draw an analogy to Tesla yesterday. And that had a pre-market high. They got all excited. I think it was like 228, 229.
Pulled the rug out from under it.
Yep, and boom, open 222.86. Rallied 40 cents to 223.38, and then boom. So keep eyeing the open to an RH. If it opens and, you know, rallies a buck and a half and then comes back down through that open, then you may want to look for it.
Did you watch his body language, though, on the conference?
Someone else said that.
Because I was watching the body language, and it did not seem like a confident CEO. It did not seem like he was saying stuff that was coming out of his mouth saying, you know, he thinks it could be a record quarter or maybe close. But his body language kind of told me that he was more nervous. And, you know, the media just pulls these quotes. They put it in there. But when you actually watch it, like watch, you know, and you saw the video of, you know, him talking, he looked nervous to me. He looked like he wasn't as confident as what he was saying. And I don't know if anybody else had that same opinion. Somebody else said that too.
I think it was
that was kind of what I read from it. And I think the market started reading that too. And I think that's why they maybe hit the stock. There's more issues here than I think he's letting on. We know we've had multiple people come on our show, including Mark Yusko. It says zero. I don't think it's a zero, because I think if the price goes low enough on Tesla, I think somebody will buy it out. But I do think that there's more issues here. The debt issues are a major issue. And I don't know, man. You know, I love the product. I love the car. I like the story still, but the debt is just such an overhang. And they're burning cash so quickly, and they seem to be still continuing to burn it here. And he just didn't look confident yesterday, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you're not the only one here. See, if it's traded up a little bit this morning, up $1.24, let's see. Needs to hold the close, your close from yesterday in the green now. Your close 209.26, and that was right near the low, so that's a good number. And, 209.01 was your June 10th low. So, boom, mate. 209, that's a major number there in Tesla. Spencer?
Yeah, before I wrap, Dennis, today should be a holiday for you. Do you know why?
No.
Courtesy of the Wall Street Journal. On this day in 1991, the New York Stock Exchange began after-hours trading for the first time.
When did they do that? What's the date?
1991.
Really?
What took us so long?
Two crossing sessions of trades among institutional investors extended the day to 5:15. So there we go. Today should be
really.
Congratulations.
Nope. When did it go to 5? So what time? 5:50 they took it to?
No, 5:15. Just for that day in 19. So whatever, June 13th.
1991. Well, see, I've always traded pre-market after hours, but I didn't start trading professionally until 19 with Bright until 1999. So there you go. That's a nice little. It should be a holiday for me because we know I like to do a lot of after hours trading and pre-market trading.
All right. On that note, that'll be it for today's show. We are, and I can't believe I'm saying this, a week away from the Benzinga Trading Summit next Thursday, Sheraton Times Square in New York City, bzprofit.com. I believe the promo code PMP50 is still active, all caps PMP50, to get half off your ticket. I was talking with someone on Twitter yesterday. He asked whether he should get a ticket to the trading lounge or the general admission. I said this, the trading lounge isn't necessarily for more advanced traders. It is for traders who want more hands-on one-on-one education. That's more what it's for. So if that's your thing, check that out. Dennis,
like the trading lounge, we're going to have – who's all in there? Just give it to us again. Because yeah, this is where me and Joel, the majority of our day, Joel and I are going to be in the trading lounge, not on the main floor. I know I'm speaking. I think they set a 4:40 on the main stage for 10 minutes.
Most people in the lounge.
I'll go on a tangent. I probably won't even get to talk about what I'm talking about for 10 minutes. I could talk 10 minutes right now about nothing. But in the trading room, like Joel and I's intention is to bounce around, meet a lot of traders, talk individually with a lot of traders. You know, I have some presentations I could give to. Maybe I'll give a couple small ones in there. But we really bounce around, just meet a lot of traders and, you know, talk about, you know, tell me about your trading, you know, and trying to help individual traders as much as we can. So if you're struggling with your trading, if, you know, if you just want to try to improve your trading, I bang for the buck. Like if I was first starting, and I'm not just saying that, I mean, I'd love to be able to go talk to traders like, you know, Anne-Marie Ban and Jeremy Newsom and traders who are making money on a consistent basis and pick their brains. And that's the biggest thing. And that's why the trading lounge is more than the main stage, because that's where the traders are going to be able to go in there and pick their brains.
Yeah, we have Jeremy Newsom, Kenny Glick, and Anne-Marie Ban in the morning. And then it's going to be Todd Gordon, Christian Fromhertz, who did an excellent webinar along with Jeremy in the afternoon. Late addition to speaking in the main room, and I can't believe you let me forget about him, Joe Saluzzi. Is gonna come in and
on the main stage.
Yeah, on the main stage. Looking forward. He's a funny guy. I was talking to him yesterday. Yep.
So. All right. So this will all be next Thursday. We'll all be there. bzprofit.com, promo code PMP50 for that. Thanks to both of today's guests, Mark Chaikin and Ryan Dietrich. Thanks to all of you in our chats on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Please remember all the information on our show is for informational purposes only, not meant to be investing advice. And that's all she wrote. So everyone have a good rest of your day, and we will see you on Friday.